This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The following is a special presentation of the Hour of the Time. Welcome once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. And without wasting any time, this is Colonel Archibald Roberts, United States Army, retired.
Now, I'm numbered among those Americans who believe that the greatest threat to our survival as a nation lies in the increasing centralization of military power in the Security Council of the United Nations. Now, those of you who have studied the United Nations and its charter believe that Americans must halt this buildup of an international army, or we will soon find ourselves supervised by sociological drovers on a one-world animal farm. And this is what we're going to talk about this evening. Now, of course, the planners tell us that the United Nations is the hope of the world. But the United Nations is not the hope of the world. We know that the United Nations is not what UN propagandists tell us it is. And certainly the United Nations is not what UN supporters think it is. Because the United Nations can only be what the provisions of the Charter say it is. And by UN Charter definition, the United Nations is, in fact, an agency for imposing a one-world government on the nations of the world by peaceful means, if possible, by force and violence, if necessary. And so, this evening, I'd like to invite each of you here to investigate with me the men and the system which has transferred our entire military establishment and with it our sovereignty to the United Nations. During the course of this talk, we will find that America has entered a new dimension in warfare. And we will also find that the weapons employed by our enemy are duplicity, subversion, and treason. And this is what it's all about. But more than that, at the conclusion of the talk, I hope to present for your examination what we believe to be constitutionally correct procedures for mounting a citizen's demand of the United Nations Charter and techniques for voiding the law effect of the United Nations Treaty Agreement by state legislation. And so the title of my talk is Why Your Soldier Son Serves Under the Command of a Soviet Communist. However, I think before we get into the talk, you have a right to know why I and many other military personnel have become personally involved in this psycho-political war. And that's what it is. It's a psycho-political war. And I believe that the quickest way of explaining our position to you is to repeat the oath of office all of us took upon being commissioned into the United States Army. Because I have never renounced this oath. This continues to be my creed, and this is it. I, Arch E. Roberts, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which I am about to enter. So help me God. I think that's pretty clear. I don't think there can be any equivocation with this oath. Now, another reason for my resistance to this United Nations takeover lies in the fact that my ancestors, with yours, created in this land the best form of government ever devised by the hand of man. And we must not lose this heritage. We must not lose this heritage. Well, let's begin our examination of the United Nations. And let's do this by identifying the founding fathers of the United Nations. And, sir, our first choice in this gallery of rogues must be Mr. Alger Hiss. And Mr. Hiss, of course, was Chief of Special Political Affairs in the Department of State. And Hiss was also a deputy to Mr. Leo Pasvolsky, about whom we will talk a little later. And Hiss had policy jurisdiction over all internal State Department activities and organizations. And he had the logistics and policy support of our activities in international organizations. And this specifically included the United Nations and included the specialized agencies in the United Nations, and it included the American complement of personnel in the United Nations. Now, the origins of the Hiss relationship to the United Nations is told in a book, Seeds of Treason. And this book was written by Dr. Ralph E. Toledano. And on page 110 of his book, Professor D. Toledano has this to say, and I quote from Seeds of Treason. In August 1944, Hiss attended the Dumbarton Oaks Conference as Executive Secretary. When he returned, all matters pertaining to the proposed security organization came under his direct supervision. With Harry Hopkins, Cordell Hull, and others, Hiss worked on the first draft of the United Nations Charter. End of quote. Well, Hiss, of course, was approved by Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt as the General Secretary of the San Francisco Conference, which spawned the United Nations on 26 June 1945. And 3 years later, on 3 August 1948, Whitaker Chambers, in testimony before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, identified Alger Hiss as a Soviet espionage agent and a member of the Harold Ware Communist cell in Washington, D.C. Now you know that Hiss was subsequently convicted of perjury for denying under oath his communist activities. The first author of the United Nations Charter. And this Alger Hiss, principal author of the first draft of the United Nations Charter, is also cited extensively in over 30 Senate investigations and reports dealing with subversion in the United States. Think about it. Well, our second choice of UN founding fathers is this Mr. Leo Pasvolsky, whom I mentioned earlier in the beginning of this talk. Now, Mr. Leo Pasvolsky was an obscure but a very powerful State Department chief. And Pasvolsky died in 1953. And in an obituary of 18 May, Time magazine had this to say about Mr. Pasvolsky. And here is the issue of Time magazine for this date, 18 May. Now, you know that Time magazine is an official publication of the establishment, and they are not likely to malign one of their own. And I quote from Time, died Leo Pasvolsky, 59, Russian-born architect of the United Nations Charter, an economics expert at Brookings Institute, a late 30s protege of Secretary of State Cordell Hull. Economist Pasvolsky served as Hull's principal behind-the-scenes strategist at the Dumbarton Oaks and San Francisco conferences. Now listen to this. He broke a Big Five deadlock at San Francisco, said Time, by reinterpreting the veto question and rewriting the UN Charter. End of quote. Well, the Time magazine revelation that Leo Pasvolsky, a Russian-born State Department chief, was the architect of the United Nations Charter may explain why much of this charter was copied directly from the Soviet Constitution. And you can lay the two documents side by side and identify what was taken from one and placed in the other. Well, it's also significant to know that in 1941, when Pasvolsky was named the chief of the Division of Special Research, he said that one of his objectives would be, and I quote Pasvolsky, one of his objectives would be to survey the basic principles which should underlie a desirable world order after the termination of present hostilities, meaning World War II. And listen to this, and to devise means of the limitation of national sovereignty. Well, I'd say that the provisions of the United Nations Charter pretty well meet Mr. Pasvolsky's requirements, particularly in limiting the national sovereignty of the United States of America. Well, the third member in our study of UN founding fathers, and some of you will have another choice, but my choice is a Professor Philip C. Jessup. Now, I'm sure that most of you know that Mr. Jessup attended all of these strategy meetings which preceded the San Francisco conference. He's a midwife of the United Nations. For example, he was Assistant Secretary General of the UNRWA conference in 1943. And he was Assistant Secretary General at the Bretton Woods conference in 1944. And, of course, he was a member of the American delegation at San Francisco in 1945. But here's something else you may not know about Professor Philip C. Jessup. Jessup is also a former head of the Institute of Pacific Relations. Now, you know that the Institute of Pacific Relations was investigated by the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee. And this security committee found that the IPR was a vehicle used by the communists to orient American Far Eastern policy toward communist objectives. A vehicle used by the communists for communist objectives. Well, many authorities on interlocking subversion in government departments believe that the activities of the IPR were a primary cause for the loss of China to the communists following World War II? And where is this Professor Philip Jessup now? Well, perhaps predictably, Mr. Jessup is now the U.S. representative on the U.N. World Court. That's where he is. That's where he is. And of course, Jessup is also cited extensively in many investigations on subversion and Soviet activities in the United States, including this Institute of Pacific Relations, which I mentioned, but also in the activities of United States citizens employed in the United Nations, strategy and tactics of world communism, interlocking subversion in government departments, and scope of Soviet activity in the United States. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that this sampling of the political persuasion with which the authors of the United Nations Charter are associated should help us in understanding the concealed objectives of the United Nations. Now, let's get a clearer picture of these concealed objectives. And to do this, let's study one of the offices of the United Nations, just one. And this office will be the Undersecretary for Political and Security Affairs. Now, this Undersecretary is the executive officer of the Security Council. The executive officer. And anybody here who understands military organization tables will understand that this man is, in fact, the commander-in-chief of all armed forces placed at the disposal of the Security Council. He is, in other words, he is the commander-in-chief of the United Nations Army. He is also, incidentally, the custodian of all U.S. plans for self-defense, including the plans for Korea and Vietnam, for example. And perhaps it won't surprise you to know that this U.N. military post is consistently awarded to a Soviet communist, consistently. Now, Americans don't seem to be alarmed by the fact that their sons serve under the command of a Soviet communist. But this complacency cannot be charged to lack of information, because the New York Times, which is the voice of the establishment, in an article dated 22 May 1963, headed "Russian Name to High UN Post," identified this very condition. And I would like to show you that article, and I have a copy of it right here, the New York Times. And I quote from the Times: "The post for political and security council affairs," said the Times, "traditionally has been held by a Soviet national. The undersecretary," said the Times, "is a senior advisor to the secretary general." Well, I guess he is. End of quote. Well, I took the trouble to look up the UN yearbooks for this period, and I found that the United Nations yearbooks confirms the New York Times article, because here are the official identifications from the UN itself of the appointees to the Undersecretary for Political and Security Affairs since the very beginning of the United Nations. And here they are. 1946 through 1949, Arkady Alexandrovich Sobolev, USSR. 1949 through 1953, this is the Korean War period, Konstantin E. Zhchenko, USSR. 1953 through 1954, Ilya S. Chernyshev, USSR. 1955 through 1957, Dragoslav Protich, Yugoslavia. 1958 through 1959, Anatoly Dobrynin, USSR. 1960 through 1962, Gregory Petrovich Arkadyev, USSR. 1962 through 1963, Eugenie D. Kislev, USSR. 1963 and at the present time, Vladimir Pavlovich Suslov, USSR. Not an Irishman in the bunch. Now, Now, many leading Americans have voiced anxiety at the constant appointment of a communist to fill this UN military post. And that's exactly what it is. It's a military post. And one of these who clearly recognized the concealed purposes of the United Nations was the late Congressman Usher L. Burdick of North Dakota. And on 17 January 1957, Representative Burdick made a speech on the floor of the House in Washington, D.C. And the title of this talk was, "The Russians Are and Will Continue to Be on the Inside of Any Military Action Taken by the Security Council of the United Nations." And this is what Mr. Burdick stated. And I have a photostatic copy of the Congressional Record, which carried this talk, and I will quote the Congressional Record. "This means that since the Security Council was organized, the Russians, through this secretary, have had close touch with all military plans." Listen to this. "The directives to MacArthur and the reports coming from him," said Congressman Burdick, "passed through the hands of this secretary." Now can you understand what MacArthur was up against in trying to win the Korean War? Think about it. Think about it. Well, there's no question but that the Soviets control the United Nations Army. But their standards are not our standards. And I denounce the men and the system which has placed our entire military establishment into this intolerable position. Here's a pocket-sized copy of the United Nations Charter. This is it. This is the beauty. Now, this little booklet is available from the UN headquarters in New York City, and the price is 15 cents. I suggest that everybody here get a copy of this little booklet and study it, because your life may depend on it. Now, if you'll turn to page 22 of the Charter, which I will do, you'll turn to page 22, you'll find Chapter 7. And the title of Chapter 7 is Actions with Respect to Threats to the Peace, Breaches of the Peace, and Acts of Aggression. This is Chapter 7. Now, Chapter 7 constitutes the war-making authority of the United Nations. The war-making authority. For example, in Article 47 of this chapter, there is the following statement, and I quote from the Charter. "There shall be established a military staff committee to advise and assist the Security Council on all questions relating to the maintenance of international peace and security. And the Military Staff Committee shall be responsible under the Security Council for the strategic direction of any armed forces placed at the disposal of the Security Council." Strategic direction. Well, what does it mean? Well, this legalistic language simply means, of course, that the Security Council of the United Nations has the authority to declare peace and to go in shooting, as was the case in Katanga. That's what it means. That's what it means. Now, I know that the Military Staff Committee is rather confusing, but the Military Staff Committee concept was inserted into the Charter to fool the American people. To fool the American people. And proof of this fraud is found in a book written by the first Secretary General of the UN, and he should know, Mr. Trigby Lee. Mr. Trigby Lee. And he wrote a book in the cause of peace. And on page 431 of his book, Mr. Trigby Lee had this to say, and I quote, "The Military Staff Committee, covered under Article 47, so far has been stillborn." End of quote. Further, Article 46 also states, "Plans for the application of armed force shall be made by the Security Council with the assistance of the Military Staff Committee." Well, as there is no Military Staff Committee, this assistance is provided by the Undersecretary for Political and Security Affairs, whose plans have included the American defeat in Korea and the rape of Katanga and our military and economic hemorrhage in Vietnam.
This is the Voice of Freedom.
General Secretary.
We have to re-cue this tape, ladies and gentlemen. If you'll bear with me for just a few seconds. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, Eager, Arizona. Tonight's presentation is a special broadcast of the Hour of the Time featuring Colonel Archibald Roberts, United States Army, retired. This speech was actually given during the late 1960s.
Sadly, Article 47 of the UN Charter also reveals that the Congress of the United States have abdicated their responsibility to the American citizen. Because, of course, the U.S. Constitution, in Section 8, Article 1, directs that the Congress shall have the power to declare war. And yet the United States Senate has officially admitted that the U.S. Constitution was ignored in the Korean action. And on page 3605 of the General MacArthur hearings, a joint Senate committee had this to say, and I quote from the Senate hearing, "The United States should never again become involved in a war without the consent of Congress. For the first time in the history of our nation, the constitutional authority of the Congress to declare war has been bypassed." Has been bypassed. Well, Korea was the precedent for UN jurisdiction in committing American soldiers to battle all over the world. And it's perfectly obvious that the Security Council of the United Nations, and not the Congress of the United States, is now the supreme authority, which, as in the case of Korea, and of all of the campaigns which have followed Korea, send our troops and our equipment everywhere in the world to maintain international peace and security. Ladies and gentlemen, at this very moment, America's sons, at the direction and plan of communists in the United Nations, give their lives and blood to further the concealed objectives of the United Nations. Now, this situation should not surprise those of you who know that the United Nations Charter was written by communists and traitors, among whom the arch-criminals Alger Hiss, Leo Pasvolsky, and Philip C. Jessup are prominently listed. My fellow Americans, this communist-dominated UN Security Council was the policy-making organization which imposed a substitute for victory in the Far East. And this communist-dominated UN Security Council is the supreme military headquarters which even now directs and manipulates U.S. armed forces in no-win military adventures all over the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I respectfully submit to you that the real enemy in Korea was not this illiterate Chinese peasant who crossed the Yalu with a bag of rice and a Russian rifle. This wasn't the enemy. The real enemy crouches in the chambers of the United Nations, where he remains concealed to this very day. Now, this concealed enemy has attempted to supplant the United States Constitution and to establish in its place the United Nations Charter as the supreme law of the land. And let's prove that statement. Furthermore, the Congress of the United States has acquiesced to this criminal abrogation of the Constitution. Now, let me quote from Senate Document 87, titled Review of the United Nations Charter. This is an official document from the United States Senate. And and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. End of quote. Well, I hope that we have now exposed the fiction that the United Nations is some kind of a debating society. The United Nations is not a debating society. The United Nations is an instrumentality for global conquest. And its objective is to overthrow the constitutional government of the United States and of the several states by peaceful means if possible, by force and violence if necessary. Well, I think at this point in our study we should have clearly defined the war-making functions of the United Nations. Now let's learn something about the international sleight of hand which has transferred our military establishment to the United Nations. And let's go back to the Charter of the United Nations. For, of course, under Article 43 of the UN Charter is found the authority and the law for establishing an armed United Nations. And it's all here. And I quote Article 43. All members of the United Nations, states Article 43, in order to contribute to the maintenance of international peace and security, undertake to make available to the Security Council on its call and in accordance with a special agreement or agreement, armed forces, assistance, and facilities, including rites of passage, necessary for the purpose of maintaining international peace and security. End of quote. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the most cursory examination of Article 43 permits only one conclusion, only one. It's the intent of Article 43 to provide the United Nations with unlimited war-making capabilities and to create a super government of the world. This is what it means. Because, of course, Article 43 will wipe national boundaries off the map. And it will create an irresistible international army. And it will chain the people of the world to a military juggernaut. And so finally, we have now arrived at the real objective of the United Nations Charter. Because absolute, monolithic, military power is the concealed objective of the United Nations. This is the power. Of course, the achievement of this goal must be preceded by brainwashing, which will condition the American public to accept this coming military dictatorship. And so the planners promote their world empire under the guise of international peace and security. Now let's illustrate this technique. You may recall that on 1 September 1961, the United States government filed with the United Nations Security Council and General Secretary a plan for the transfer of our entire military establishment to the United Nations. But there was no cry of outrage from the American people. There was no protest from the American people. There was nothing. Nothing. Well, this policy document for surrender, and this is it, this policy document for surrender is State Department Publication 7277. And its title is Freedom from War, the United States Plan for General and Complete Disarmament in a Peaceful World. Well, this somewhat innocuous little book in the United Nations Blue will kill you. It will literally kill you because in it our State Department calls for the progressive reduction of the war-making capability of the nations and the simultaneous strengthening of international institutions to settle disputes and maintain the peace. Which means, of course, the disarming of the United States and the establishment of a United nation, army. This is exactly what it means. Now, of course, to implement this plan, to implement this surrender plan, where no state, and I quote, where no state would have the military power to challenge the progressively strengthened UN peace force, it was necessary to translate this State Department policy into law. And, of course, to assure brainwashed Americans that this law was in their own best interest. Well, this is the way they worked it. Very simple. In the same month that our State Department presented its Freedom from War plan to the UN, the U.S. Congress was pressured into passing public law 87-297. Now, this is the Arms Control and Disarmament Act. It's a public law. Now, this public law, dated 26 September 1961, established the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. This is it. This is the law. Now, among the functions of this agency, and I quote from the law, I quote, are the following. The preparation for and the management of United States participation in international negotiations in the arms control and disarmament field. Two, the dissemination and coordination of public information concerning arms control and disarmament. And three, the preparation for, operation of, or as appropriate, direction of United States participation in such control systems as may become part of the United States control and disarmament activities. Well, that's pretty confusing. But stripped of its deliberately confusing and evasive semantics, the Arms Control and Disarmament Act confers upon socialistic bureaucrats the authority to destroy our sovereignty in secret international agreements and to propagandize the American people into accepting these felonious acts as being in the best interests of the United States. And three, to transfer the armed forces of the United States into a United Nations control system. This is what it means. Ladies and gentlemen, the enormity of this subversion is nearly incomprehensible. And as an Army officer, I vehemently protest the transfer of our men into an organization whose every precept and very existence contravenes the Constitution I have sworn to uphold. And I reject these illegal agreements which would place me under a foreign flag and an enemy commander-in-chief. And I deny the right of anybody in my government or anywhere else to enlist me in a United Nations Army. Ladies and gentlemen, the preservation of this Christian republic and of our institutions of freedom now urgently demand that we correctly assess the hidden purposes of the United Nations Charter. Ladies and gentlemen, certain federal agents have in fact acted under what they assert to be a legal use of the limited and delegated powers enumerated in the Constitution, but have in fact negotiated with foreign governments to coerce these United States into a United Nations treaty agreement, which would constitute a surrender to these foreign governments of the rights and the liberties assured to the people under our Constitution, and to surrender the powers of government which this Constitution guarantees to our people. Now, we have heard time and again that the constitutional legality of the United Nations Treaty is found in Article 6 of the Constitution. But, ladies and gentlemen, a treaty cannot authorize what the Constitution forbids, nor change the character of the national or state government, nor cede a portion of the territory of a state without its consent. No federal agent has the power or the authority to modify or to dissolve the constitutional compact. No agent has this authority. It is the states. It is the states, said Martin Van Buren, who is our eighth president, acting either by their legislatures or in convention, that any valid alteration of this instrument, the Constitution, can alone be made. End of quote. Therefore, the state, acting in its higher sovereign capacity, is the only agency which can now repudiate these unauthorized acts of its agents. And so, the proper party to now challenge the validity of the United Nations Treaty is a party to the Constitutional Compact, a sovereign state. Now, the reason that the people and the states have been burdened with the acts of these federal agents in their surrender of the powers of government to the United Nations is the fact that the states have not repudiated as unauthorized and void the attempts of its agents to act beyond their authority. And these acts have the effect of law, not by any reason of a non-existent authority of the federal agents, but because the states gave these acts authority by failing to repudiate the attempts of its agents to exceed their authority. And so, in the light of these failures, and because events in Washington certainly prove that Americans have lost control of the federal government, I now respectfully propose that we the people, act to force our state governments to do what may be necessary to protect the interests of the United States and its people. I suggest that you and I, being the last reserves in this struggle against United Nations tyranny, generate a public demand for the appointment of a special joint committee of our state legislature to inquire whether there were powers of government delegated by federal agents to the United Nations by treaty. I suggest that these legislative committees conduct an investigation as to whether the United Nations Treaty affects the state or relates to the relinquishment of any of the laws or the rights affecting the state or its people, and whether the United Nations Treaty would deprive the state or its people of rights and privileges, or would involve any change in the provisions of the Constitution of the United States without the consent of the government of the state and its people. I suggest to you that upon determining that the United Nations Treaty Agreement is beyond the authority granted to these federal agents by constitutional compact, that the state legislature prepare a statute, not a resolution, a law, declaring that the United Nations Treaty Agreement is null, void, and of no effect in the state. I further suggest that this law, this statute, directs that a violation of the law shall be a felony, and that persons so convicted shall be subject to judgments of up to $100,000 fine or 20 years confinement in the state penitentiary, or both. The legislature of the state, by adopting such a law, such a statute, will clarify and make definite the law in the state
and will discharge the state's obligation to ensure that the limits of the United States Constitution are respected within the boundaries of the state. Ladies and gentlemen, the United Nations stands indicted as a subversive organization. Its objective is the destruction of our Christian republic. But now we know that relief from this condition of peril is in our hands, yours and mine. May God save the United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to a special presentation of the Hour of the Time, featuring Colonel Archibald Roberts, United States Army retired. The speech that you heard was given in the latter part of the 1960s. It was difficult for people to understand and believe what he was telling them at that time, even though he spoke to a very receptive audience. It represented a very small percentage of the American public, much like today. But today, a lot more people are waking up. For you see, all of the things that he discussed and talked about in his speech have now come to pass. And all of you listening know that. You also know that there's something terribly wrong. You can feel it in your gut, even though maybe some of you can't put your finger on it. This nation is being destroyed. It is being destroyed from within. According to a very well thought out and implemented plan of action. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to a special presentation of the Hour of the Time featuring Colonel Archibald Roberts, United States Army, retired. He spoke to his audience in the latter years of the decade of the 60s, and it was extremely difficult for people to understand that what he was telling them was going to come to pass, except for a small percentage who have always been awake, as has always been the case in the history of this country. But now that you've heard what he said at the latter part of 1969, and you see it happening all around you, you see that our military forces are serving as the peacekeeping forces for the United Nations, and that they are actually being placed under the command of foreign officers, and that the military command of the United Nations has always been and always will be, by agreement, a Russian general. Ladies and gentlemen, the disarmament plan of the United Nations that Colonel Archibald Roberts discussed in his speech in the latter half of the 60s is now being implemented. What do you think all this gun control legislation is all about? Why do you think that foreign forces are training on our soil with our military forces to act as joint peacekeeping forces in joint United Nations operations? And why do you think they're specifically practicing urban warfare on mock-ups that do not resemble European, Asian, South American, or African cities, ladies and gentlemen? They're almost exact duplicates of any average American town or city that you will find and that you are probably living in at this moment. It is because, ladies and gentlemen, at some date in the near future, the American people will be disarmed, either voluntarily or by force. And when that happens, the buffalo chip is going to hit the fan, because there are some of us who would rather die than become a slave in a socialist New World Order. Under any guise, under any description. I hope that you will be one of us. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless you all. Thank you. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio. And over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen, is a grassroots movement of the American people and freedom-loving peoples in foreign countries that want to take back their right to speak, to seize back the controlled airwaves, and to tell the truth to those who have probably never heard it before in their entire lives. You too can be an affiliate station of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. All you need is a satellite receiving system, and I'll tell you how to get that, and a low-power FM transmitter. Everything that we propose is absolutely 100% lawful and legal. And you can stay within those legal and lawful bounds, or you can take a little more freedom, if you so desire, and crank up the power. As long as you're not engaged in what is known as interstate commerce, there is nothing that anyone can do about it. Send $1 in a self-addressed, stamped, number 10 size envelope. That's a regular business envelope, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll send you complete details along with our catalog of studio quality stereo tapes and a whole lot of other things. Address your letter to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's Harvest at P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Stay tuned now for Michael Cottingham with his excellent broadcast, Quest for Health.